The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors. Looking out on the morning rain, I used to feel so uninspired. And when I knew I had to face another day, Lord, it made me feel so tired. Before the day I met you, life was so unkind. You're the key to my peace of mind. You made me feel.
You are listening to Fresh Air Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and 106.7 in St. Paul. This is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman.
This program will inspire you, inform you, feed you healthy recipes, engage you politically, and enlighten you spiritually.
Yet another study says sitting leads to higher death rates and higher rates of chronic disease and illness. A study published in the International Journal of Behavioral Nutrition and Physical Activity followed over 63,000 men from 45 to 65 years old, and they recorded how much time they spent on their duff. While monitoring sitting, they also took a detailed look at their overall health. The men were placed into categories of sitting. The categories were less than 4 hours, 4 to 6 hours, 6 to 8 hours, and 8 hours or more. As with other research, this study found evidence that the more you sit, the more likely you are to have chronic illness and therefore a shortened lifespan. This research showed a clear correlation to sitting and health. Those who sat less than 4 hours a day were much less likely to have chronic disease. Those who sat for 8 hours or more per day had a significant increase in diabetes. With each category, the more sitting, the more likely you were to have this. Research, 8 hours a day is bad for us. However, there are critics out there. One thing to keep in mind is that what isn't clear is how many of these subjects who suffer from chronic disease sit because of their chronic disease. Is it the sitting that causes the disease, or the disease that causes the sitting? More research definitely needs to be done in that area. However, this research, along with other big studies, show that moving throughout the day is most likely a very healthy thing to do. In 2007, a study found that prolonged sitting was as bad for your health as smoking. One study out of Australia found that adults who sit for 11 or more hours per day had a 40% increase of dying in the next 3 years as compared to those who sat fewer hours. There are a lot of implications to this research. Sitting obviously affects the masses, from airline pilots to the millions of people who sit in cubicles for work. We may need to find ways to counteract the seemingly devastating effects of sitting too much. If you are physically able, it is undoubtedly good to get up and move that body. This has been a Health Note by Dr. Jonathan Arnold of Arnold Chiropractic and Acupuncture.
This evening, we're going to be listening to a talk by a man who is called Mr. Oxygen, Ed McGabe, and he says that most diseases can't exist long in active oxygen. Ed McGabe is the only person in history who interviewed thousands of oxygen therapy using patients and doctors worldwide, and also the first to internationally publish popular oxy information books and tapes. Ed McGabe is self-published, self-promoted, and has sold over 250,000 copies of his first book, Oxygen Therapies. Because the big publishers, news bureaus, talk shows, movie stars, sports heroes, internet, and AIDS group ignored him when he personally contacted them all with positive proof of the effectiveness of oxygen ozone therapies, Ed appeared on over 1,500 media and speaking events in 8 countries over 10 years in order to get the word out and help everybody. He did it because somehow we have to overcome the public lack of knowledge about the proven safe oxygen ozone solution, as well as repair the most almost lack of media attention paid to them. So that's what we're going to be listening to today, Ed McGabe, and we're going to be learning about oxygen therapy.
This is the Oxygen Therapies Lecture. I am Ed McCabe, the author of the book, Flood Your Body with Oxygen. And my first book sold 250,000 copies, and that was without a major publisher. So people want to know what these things are and how they can use them in their lives. I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself, then I'm going to tell you what's wrong, and then I'm going to tell you the things that are available for you to do something about what's wrong. So I hope at the end of the lecture you'll have more knowledge than you came in with, and you'll understand how simple all this really is. Okay, from the beginning of the book, this is Mona Harrison, MD. She's the former assistant dean at the Boston University School of Medicine, and she said, "Take note, the interest this book will unleash is noteworthy. Both lay and professional persons who secretly will not admit their ignorance in this emerging field of study will use it as a guide." Again, that's the former assistant dean at the Boston University Medical School. So she must have known what she was talking about. Why is oxygen therapy important to us? Let's consider some of the statistics first. Humans breathe in and out around 370 quarts, or 92.5 gallons, or 350 liters of oxygen every 24 hours. So every 24 hours, 370 quarts of oxygen is going into your body. But we only use 1/4 of the air we breathe. We exhale 3/4 of it unused. Someone weighing 154 pounds or 70 kilograms builds up and breaks down again around 176 pounds or 80 kilograms of ATP in 24 hours. And 70% of the body's defense is in the intestines. We'll get into that later. First, I want to review for you some of the available literature as to what the problem is among human society at this point in time, as far as so many people are getting disease, so many people get prematurely old, so many people have aging far beyond what they should if this was a natural environment, pristine, without the pollution, etc. And I'm going to build a little case here quickly. We don't have a lot of time, so I'm going to go over this very quickly, just read the headlines basically. But here's some either newspaper articles or clinical studies or peer-reviewed journals or news reports or websites that have articles about this. So what we're going to be talking about here is the increase in pollution, the response of the medical institutions to this, what they're doing about it, and in the end, I will show you what you can do about it personally because of all these problems I'm going to tell you about. If you were fed a lot of sugar when you were a child, your taste preferences are formed then, and today's diabetes and obesity epidemics are a result of mommy feeding you a lot of sugar. Isn't that interesting? 13 pesticides are found in the body of the average American. 13 pesticides. Comprehensive survey of more than 1,300 Americans has found traces of weed and bug killers in the bodies of everyone tested. The survey was conducted by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Credible source. Okay, here's the Georgetown University Medical Center. Researcher sheds light on ghostwriting in medical journals. So what happens is someone's writing a peer-reviewed article or whatever, he gets a ghostwriter to come in. He's not even the guy that did the research. He's got a ghostwriter writing the medical sites that then people make decisions on. Well, is that process flawed? Here we have rogue chemist blows whistle on big pharmaceuticals. Greg Ciola, the editor of Crusader, interviewed whistleblower Shane Ellison, Master of Science, former pharmaceutical chemist and author of the book Health Myths Exposed. His book is a timely and scathing expose about the war on deadly FDA-approved drugs. Ellison felt it was his responsibility to reveal the truth about the sordid tactics of the pharmaceutical industry after he witnessed firsthand how they deceive the public. So fraud within the peer-reviewed journal process, etc. And this chemist is showing you how Big Pharma is making a lot of money by lying to you. Now, contrast this to the many people I've met and who said, oh, well, if it was any good, my doctor would tell me all about it. And, you know, what you're teaching, it sounds great, but, you know, unless my doctor, your doctor's being lied to. Keep that in mind. Your doctor is being lied to, and that's the problem. Okay, the Scotsman. Ex-medical journal editor reveals drug firms' dirty tricks. Pharmaceutical companies are using their massive financial clout to corrupt medical journals by rigging clinical trials of new drugs, was claimed today. Who's claiming this? Well, it's Richard Smith, former editor of the British Medical Journal. He's exposed a series of tricks used by drug firms to ensure good publicity for their products in prestigious journals. He said it was often impossible for editors of the journals to spot a rigged trial, despite the process of peer review, where research is checked independently, and also highlighted a conflict of interest because publishing trials by major drug companies would result in increased sales of the medical journal. So you see the sweetheart deal they've got with each other. You're being lied to. Well, statistics prove that prescription drugs are 16,400% more deadly than terrorists. If you compare the number of people killed by terrorists to what's going on, what if six jumbo jets crashed every day in the United States? This is from newstarget.com. And these jumbo jets that crashed claimed the lives of 783,936 people every year. That would certainly qualify as a massive tragedy, wouldn't it? Jumbo jet every day crashing, okay? Well, forget what if. The tragedy is happening right now. Over 750,000 people actually do die in the United States every year, although not from plane crashes. They die from something far more common and rarely perceived by the public as dangerous. That is modern medicine. A 2003 medical report, Death by Medicine. Where does the media attention for this tragedy, for all these people dying? Where's the media reporting of the jumbo jet crash? They'd be right there in the scene, but this happens every day, and they say nothing. Where's the government support for stopping these medical mistakes before they happen? The authors of the study involved a painstaking review of thousands of medical records. The United States spends $282 billion annually on deaths due to medical mistakes or iatrogenic deaths. That's a conservative estimate. Only a fraction of medical errors are reported, according to the study. Actual mistakes are likely to be up to 20 times higher than the reported number because doctors, they fear retaliation for those mistakes. That's why they're not reported. So it's probably 20 times higher. Over 1 million patients are injured in the U.S. hospitals each year. Approximately 280,000 die annually as a result of these injuries. Therefore, the iatrogenic death rate, doctor-caused, hospital-caused death rate, dwarfs the the annual automobile accident mortality rate of 45,000 and accounts for more deaths than all other accidents combined. This report was issued 10 years ago, when America had 34 million fewer citizens and drug company scandals like the Vioxx recall hadn't happened yet. USA Today exposes conflicts of interest in FDA drug approvals. FDA advisors are tied to the industry. What they are talking about is that 92% of the meetings, at least one member had a financial conflict of interest. At 55% of the meetings, half or more of the FDA advisors had conflicts of interest. And conflicts were the most frequent in the 57 meetings when broader issues were discussed. 92% of the members had conflicts. At the 102 meetings dealing with the fate of a specific drug, 33% of the experts had a financial conflict.
We're listening to a talk by Mr. Oxygen. Ed McCabe is talking to us about oxygen therapy and wellness. He says that most diseases can't exist long in active oxygen.
So, we have a problem. All these drugs, attendant side effects, the dangerous things that can happen to you once you get into the system and you start taking these drugs are not designed to cure anything. These drugs are designed to keep you buying more drugs. They make you feel just good enough so you can keep going to work and keep paying for more drugs. They're not designed to cure anything. Now, the problem with a lot of these disease epidemics we're hearing about, West Nile virus, SARS, all this stuff, is everybody says, well, you take one of the aspirins or the NSAIDs to lower the natural viral infection fever. Well, that's the exact opposite thing we need to be doing. That's why they're spreading. I'll explain it. This is from Marshall Smith, editor of Brojohn Gazette. Now, he doesn't know about oxygen, so he didn't include that in here, but we'll get to that. The viral core molecule of an RNA cannot produce if the body temperature is above 101 degrees. Humans have genetically developed a natural method to defeat viral infections called a fever. With a mild fever of 101 degrees, the telomeres on the ends of the RNA molecule cannot attach and the virus cannot reproduce itself, and the body's white blood cells quickly destroy the invading virus. But the modern regular treatment for a fever from a cold or flu is to reduce the fever to ease the discomfort. You see, you can't kill the virus if you take away the fever. By lowering the fever below 100 degrees, the invading virus is allowed to reproduce and spread massively throughout the body. If the multitude of viruses finally cross the blood-brain barrier, the result is a fever of 104 or more, causing brain damage and death. This is often called RISE syndrome or viral encephalitis, and it's not a disease, but the result of improper treatment with aspirin or other NSAIDs to lower the natural viral infection fever. The best advice, do not try to lower a fever. It's your genetically derived natural human defense against a viral infection. Many older doctors knew this, which is the reason for the old docs saying, go to bed, stay warm, drink fluids. But younger docs just out of med school have been taught there's a drug or a pill to treat everything. The result of using expensive pills or over-the-counter medications to reduce the fever from colds and flu, and we're talking about SARS and other viral illnesses as well, is prolonged illness, the epidemic spread of viral diseases, and the unneeded deaths of hundreds of thousands each year. Don't buy it.
KFAI is proud to present Judith Hill at the Dakota on Sunday, June 18th. Since her solo debut in 2008, Judith Hill has collaborated with iconic artists across multiple platforms, such as Michael Jackson, George Benson, John Legend, and Prince, among many others. Rich in throwback soul, stunning piano balladry, and swaggering psychedelic funk, Hill's recent album, Baby I'm Hollywood, finds her liberated, focused, and reborn. Tickets for Judith Hill can be found at the Dakota website. Visit dakotacooks.com for more details.
When it comes to mental health, connecting with others can be a way forward. Whether you're struggling or know someone who struggles, see connection as a comfort, hope, and joy. Like sending a text, sharing a moment, offering a hug. Together, we can find ways to create a path forward. For more information,